Vote like your whole world depended on it.
Voters should not be forced to go to the polls with their fingers crossed.
They understand what peace demands.
What America needs are leaders to match the greatness of her people.
Campaign appearances are getting closer and closer together as each candidate tries to get in his best shot.
Vote. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
It's going to get dirtier in these last few days.
No apologies, no regrets.
We will not be coerced. We will not tolerate being pushed around.
Okay, so be honest, how many of you have this opening video makes you nervous? Yeah, just in case you're wondering, these pictures, of course, you've got Hillary, Democratic candidate for president, Donald Trump, presumptive Republican nominee, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, Jill Stein, the Green Party, and Rocky De La Junta for the Independent Party. So today, and I warned you about this, today we're going to be talking our last in our series of In the World. And so we're going to start with some questions. This is an all play, okay? So this is all play, and your hand may go up on more than one of these. I'm just saying. So it's a couple of questions. How many of you are actually enjoying the drama of the current presidential elections? Nobody. Okay. How many of you can't wait for it to be over? Yeah, there we go. A little bit of response there. How many of you hate it when the subject of politics comes up in your extended family, maybe in your workplace or among friends? Okay. How many of you are the ones who bring up the subject just to stir things? Yeah, we got it. Okay. There goes this honest people. How many of you watched all of the debates? Okay, a few of you. How many of you watched some of the debates? Okay. How many of you are saying, what, there were debates? Okay. How many of you think churches and preachers should absolutely stay out of politics? And yet you're here today, and I warned you that's what we're going to talk about today, didn't I? Last week, we talked about two things. We talked about light. We talked about the people that people say you should never talk about religion in public, and people say you should never bring up politics in public. And last week, we talked about religion and the fact that we're not to be hid under a bushel. And this week, I said we're going to talk about this important politics. Now, we're in the last part of our series entitled In the World. This series came from Jesus' prayer for his followers in John 17. If you haven't read it yet, please read it. Not now. Wait till you go home. Okay? Please read it because it's a great, great prayer. And Jesus prays specifically for our safety. He prays for our sanctification. That means we're set apart for a purpose. He wants us to do something. And then he prays that God will send us into the world, and we're sent into the world as ambassadors of reconciliation, as agents of transformation. We are in the world to influence this world for God and for good. And we've been saying all through this series that we need to learn, as Christians, we need to learn how to engage our culture rather than always trying to escape from our culture. And in America, we have a tremendous privilege given to us by the right of vote. And we can influence our culture by our vote. So I'm stepping way outside of my comfort zone today. I have never done this before. I'm stepping way outside of my comfort zone, and I want to issue a challenge to all of those who are in attendance today, particularly to those of you who claim to be Christ followers. And for those of you who may be listening on the internet later or may get it by CD in the home, I want to challenge you with this. Now, if you're not a Christian, you pick the perfect Sunday to attend, because I think that you're going to find this practical, even though the challenge isn't directly suited for you. So my challenge isn't for everyone. My challenge is specifically for people of faith, for people who consider themselves to be Christians, to be Christ followers. And you'll understand why I say this when I issue the challenge in just a minute. If you're not a Christian, you can still apply the bulk of this message to your life. So don't tune out. So here's the challenge. This coming election, November the 8th, and before November the 8th, I want to challenge every one of us, particularly those of us who know Christ, to put our faith before our politics. Put our faith before our politics. I want to challenge you to be Christian first and your party identification second. And whatever your political views, I challenge you, subjugate them to your faith values. Because here's what I know. The problem that we have is, what would it look like if Christians filtered their politics through their faith rather than filtering their faith through their politics? What would it look like? And you may think, you know, I can't do that. But I believe that you can. You see, too many Christians leave their faith at the curb when they enter the polling place. And they sacrifice their faith values on the altar of their political affiliation, whatever it might be. And that's too bad. Because last time I checked, as far as I know, I'm just saying, as far as I know, no one goes to Washington when they die. Keep this straight. And there are things in your life that could happen that would make your strongest political views irrelevant. I've been in ministry a long time. As a matter of fact, when I was preparing this message, I stopped and I kind of calculated when I first started ministry in part-time ministry and kind of brought it up from there. And I've been in ministry for 48 years. And I will tell you this, in all of those years of ministry, not once have I sat at a hospital bed, have I gone to a funeral home, or I've been asked to conduct a funeral for people, service, for people who said, Pastor, what we really want you to do, would you just sit down here and please read us a few passages from the Constitution? Not once has that ever happened. There are, as important as the political process might be, at the end of the day, you know that your faith is really more important. So I'm challenging you, before November 8th, put your faith ahead of your politics. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand this. So what I am not saying is don't have an opinion. Everyone has an opinion. As a matter of fact, people who talk to me, some people think that I have an opinion about everything. And the truth of the matter is, I do. And so do you. So I'm not saying don't have an opinion. Nor am I saying that we should all agree. That would be foolishness to think that we would all look at the same thing and come to the same conclusions. I'm not saying that we should all agree. And I am not saying what some of you actually struggle with. I am not saying that Christians should vote for a particular party or candidate. Okay? I am saying that Christ followers should put their faith ahead of their political convictions. And I'm not a mind reader. But I know what some of you are thinking right now. Some of you are thinking, oh, Pastor, I am so glad that you are talking about this for those other people. They need to hear it. Because you don't see any conflict between your faith and your political values. Between your faith and the way you cast your vote. You think you belong to the party you belong to because you are a Christian. I mean, certainly every Christian belongs to this particular party. I mean, don't we know people? Come on. Don't we all know people who absolutely are convinced that God is Republican? I mean, it couldn't be any clearer. They can give you the Bible verse for this. Are you ready? There is a Bible verse for it. Are you ready for this? Here it is. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. I mean, it's obvious. God's got to be Republican. And then there are those who say, no. You've taken one verse. You've taken it out of context. God is Democrat. I mean, God is definitely Democrat because, you know, every time you see God, he champions the cause of the poor and needy. I mean, doesn't the Bible say, if you won't help the poor, don't expect to be heard when you cry out for help? God is definitely a Democrat. You know, you look at the ministry of Jesus. He was a health care dispensing machine, wasn't he? Free health care for everybody who came to him. And sometimes he gave them free lunches, too. I mean, God obviously is on this side. And then there are the libertarians. And you know, for the libertarians, they're convinced that God champions their cause because they say, you know what? Too much big government. We got to get away from this. We need to be responsible for our own lives. And so they, you know, think of the words of the Apostle Paul who says, don't you remember the rule we had when we lived with you? If you don't work, you don't eat. And we're getting reports that there's a bunch of lazy, good-for-nothings taking advantage of you. This must not be tolerated. We command you to get to work immediately. No excuse, no arguments. Earn your own keep. Obviously, God is libertarian. Now, is there anybody I haven't offended yet? When it comes to politics, it is not enough to ask or to say the Bible first and politics second. The reason it's not enough to do that is because I just proved to you, you can make the Bible say anything you want it to say. Nor is it enough to say Jesus first and politics second, because you dress Jesus any way you want him to dress. You just kind of put him in the clothes that you think fits your particular stance. So this brings up an interesting thing, by the way. Have you ever noticed during political season that even people who don't believe in Jesus want him on their side? Everybody's appealing to him. I have to go with Tony Evans. I don't know if you know Dr. Tony Evans from Dallas. Love this guy. Tony Evans says this. He says, Jesus didn't come to take sides. He came to take over. Dr. Evans is right. If we are going to put our faith ahead of our politics this November, we're going to have to approach the subject the way Jesus would have approached the subject. So to get this right, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to actually do what Jesus did. So if you have your Bible, we're in Matthew 22. We have looked at this verse many times before, but we're going to kind of apply it a little bit different. You can look it up in the Bible. There's a Bible in the pew in front of you. If you don't have a Bible in modern English, take that as our gift to you. We want you to have the Word of God. You look it up on your iPad or, you know, your iPhone, no playing games, okay? Or you can look up here because I'm going to put them up here for you as we go through this. And in this particular passage, what we're going to see is we're going to see Jesus comes up against an expert in the Jewish law. They're trying to trip him up. They're always trying to trip him up, find him something that's wrong. There are 601 laws in the Old Testament scripture, 601 laws. The Jewish legal system, the Jewish rabbis, took those 601 laws, and in order to protect them, they wrote volumes, 724 volumes actually, of interpretation of how to keep those laws and how to protect those laws. So with all of this as background, an expert, a guy who studies it, a guy who takes it to court, comes before Jesus and he asks him, Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law? And the amazing thing is Jesus doesn't even have to stop and think about it. I mean, he answers immediately. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind. And those who would have heard him said that would have thought, you know, that's a great answer. We like that answer. And they would have really liked it if Jesus just stopped there. Because the truth of the matter is, if it's just our heart, soul, and mind, who's to say what's going on inside you? I mean, you ask most politicians if, and I just say most because there are some, I'm sure that there are some atheist politicians, but if you ask most politicians if they love God, they're going to say, oh yeah, I do. You know, vote for me, I'm a Christian. And it's fine. And we can't judge them. We can't stand before them and say, well, you know, I don't like the way you vote. You know, you can't be a Christian and have it going that. You know, no. Because we don't know what's going on in their heart or in their soul or in their mind. None of us can see anybody else's heart, soul, and mind. Most of us are absolutely convinced that we love God this way. And it would have been great if Jesus stopped there. But Jesus didn't stop there. You see, he has a way of meddling in our lives. So he doesn't stop there. He takes this invisible thing of heart, soul, and mind, and he puts flesh on it. He takes the spiritual, and he makes it practical. He gives substance to the immaterial. Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, with all your mind. He doesn't even take a breath. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. So what Jesus has just done is he's taken all of that internal thing and brought it external. That's why the Apostle John would later write to the followers in Ephesus, if anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he's a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he has given us this command. Whoever loves God must also love his brother. So he put it very simply. How we act towards others outwardly really reveals what's going on inside us inwardly. Jesus concludes by saying all of the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. He said, in other words, if you forget all 601 laws in the Old Testament and you forget the volumes of traditions that were written by the Pharisees, just remember, love God, love your neighbor. Love God, love your neighbor. So how do we keep our faith ahead of our politics? The way we keep our faith ahead of our politics is by putting people first and politics second. Jesus constantly reminds us that people take priority over policies every time. That's why the Pharisees had such a hard time with Jesus. They had all of these laws and they had all of these traditions and they were absolutely convinced that people were made for the law, and Jesus was absolutely convinced that the law was made for people. And Jesus should know because he's the one that wrote the law, the God in the flesh. They thought people were made to follow the law, but Jesus taught that the law was made to protect people. And wherever you stand on the political spectrum today, there's common ground that I think we can all agree on. And the common ground is this. We can disagree on what's best for people. One reason we have different political parties is because we do disagree. We can disagree on what is best for people, but we can't disagree that what's best for people is what's best. You can disagree on what's best for people, but you can't disagree on what's best for people is what is best. And that's as simple and it is hard. If we forget everything else, Jesus says, love God and demonstrate it by the way you treat the people he created. That's it. And if you want to keep your faith ahead of your politics, keep people first. Keep people first. Imagine what would happen in the United States If every one of us embraced, even for just these next few months, if every one of us embraced, love your neighbor as you love yourself, our nation would be so radically transformed that it wouldn't even matter who wins the offices anywhere. And you wouldn't have to be talking that foolish talk that so many of you are talking about. If so-and-so gets elected, I'm just going to have to move to another country. I'm going to have to leave. It's not my candidate. I'm out of here. Or some other radical thing. Jesus' followers should be the most confident, curious, composed, compassionate people in the world. We have been called, we've been talking about this for the last number of weeks, we have been called as salt and light. We have been called to make a difference, to influence our culture, to engage with them. We are confident because we know that God has it in his hands. No matter who's elected, in what thing, God is still in control. He has not lost control. He is still on the throne of heaven. He is still sovereign of the universe. Nothing should worry us. Nothing should shake us. We're curious because we know that God knows everything and he's a God of infinite wisdom, and we never have to be afraid of truth. Ever have to be afraid, because all truth ultimately is God's truth. And so we should be the most curious people around. We should be, you know, why do you believe that way? What, you know, just explain to me. And we're going to get to this in just a minute. But we don't have to be afraid to ask questions. And we don't have to be afraid to hear, hopefully, what other people think. So what I'm going to ask you to do, first of all, I'm going to ask you, and this applies to everybody, you don't even have to be a Christian to do this one. This election period that we have left, try to be a student before you're a critic. Try to be a student. Try to learn, why do you hold that view? And be open and honest and willing to listen. Be curious. Composed. We should be the most composed people because we know what God is doing inside of us, and he's got us in his hand, and we have nothing to worry about again. So we shouldn't get flustered and frustrated. And we should be the most compassionate people in the world because we've experienced God's compassion for us. So let me get practical here. You and I all know this, particularly those of you who are on Facebook and probably need to just close your account right now. Just say it. It's hard to keep your cool when the subject of politics comes up. And even if you don't blow your top in front of the person that's just done it, I know what you do. You go home and you fume. How can they believe that? No way. How do they get there? So here's four questions that I want to give you that will help you. These are practical things. I'm just giving you practical insights. Here's four questions that will help you should the discussion turn towards politics. Four questions designed to keep you engaged with people and to keep you from losing your influence with them. Question one, you need to ask them, what led you to hold that view? The great thing about this question is it'll get behind people's story. It'll help you understand a little bit about their history, give you better context for understanding why they believe what they believe. And then because you understand now why they believe what they believe, it'll give you more grace to accept where they stand. And by the way, this is a great question to ask in any of the cultural sticky questions that we're being faced with today. Whether it's homosexuality or transgender or whatever else, you know, what led you to hold that view? First question. Second question. Have you always held this view? This helps us explore a little bit deeply into their story. The fact of the matter is this. Most of us vote not because we know the facts. We vote because we're biased. A bias is a view we've held without exploring it. So if you grew up in a Democratic home, most likely you're Democratic. You've never really thought about it. If you grew up in a Republican home, most likely you're Republican. You never really thought about it. And then some of you have rebelled against all of that, and you just changed the other side to irritate everybody, because that's what you like to do. But it's bias. It's a bias. You haven't really examined the facts. And a lot of times what I find with people is we vote by our tradition rather than by information. Stuff that we, you know, we can't support our biases. It's just a fact. If the conversation begins to turn, because it always does, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, when you start trying to deal with facts in people who don't understand the facts because they're voting their bias, what's going to happen is the next thing that's going to happen is they're going to turn their attack against the person. Okay? And they're going to try to denigrate the person. And they're going to say evil things about the person. And so here's the question that you ask then. This is a little bit offensive perhaps for some, but here's the question you ask. Have you actually met the candidate? Have you sat down with them and talked with them? Have you actually met them? And chances are they're going to say no. Now, the reason that this is important for those of us who are Christians, I'm going to tell you this right now. If you've never met the candidate, stop saying bad things, because we are forbidden to gossip. And we are told that no unwholesome thing should come out of our mouths. Most likely, when you ask this question, the people are going to say, well, no, I haven't met the candidate. And this helps put things into proper perspective, this next question. Then you have to say this: where do you get your information? I get most of my information from the media. Now, I'm not picking on the media, but the media is biased. And they're only going to give you their point of view. And the bottom line of it is this: if all the information I have only comes from the media, I have never gone to the candidate's campaign headquarters. I've never tried to talk to the candidate. I've never gotten the literature for the candidate himself. If all I'm getting it is from the news, at very best, I am only marginally informed, because I have the information they want me to have. And here's what I want to say. To create a relational rift with someone because of marginal information is just foolish. It's just foolish. So, let me wrap this up. I want to give you four thoughts in conclusion. First question is this: should you have an opinion? Should you have an opinion? And the answer to that is yes, of course you should have an opinion. Everyone has an opinion, and you have a right to your opinion. So should you have an opinion? Yes, you should have an opinion. Should you argue your point? Should you argue your point? And the answer to that is yes, when it's appropriate. When it's appropriate. Just as you need to hear what others have to say, why they believe what they believe, they need to hear what you have to say, why you believe what you believe. That's how we learn. We're students before we're critics. So we should be able to do this. And the problem that we have in our society is we have lost the ability to be civil with people who disagree with us. It's a terrible thing. We've got to learn to be civil and loving and accepting and tolerant of those. And tolerance doesn't mean that all views are equally right. Tolerance simply means you can disagree with me, and I, you know, that's your right. I think you're wrong, but that's your right. So you should argue your point when you have the chance and when it's appropriate. Next thing: should I make a point at the expense of influence? And the answer to that is no. No, no, no. Jesus said that we're the salt and light in this world. We are the agents of reconciliation in this fallen world. The only way we can be salt and light, the only way we can be agents of reconciliation, is if we have influence. No political point is worth giving up influence over. None. Here's the thing. Realize this. In America, your opinion means nothing. Your opinion means nothing. Your vote is what counts. Why break a relationship over something that means nothing? We should never do it. Vote your conscience. Now, is there a correct way for Christians to vote? And the answer to that is absolutely. And I'm going to tell you what it is, because I don't want anybody leaving here saying, I wonder what his views are. The correct way to vote is for you to gather the information, pray over the information, and then vote your conscience. That's the correct way to vote. But if expressing yourself or telling somebody how you voted causes you to lose influence that you might have on someone's eternal destiny, it is not worth it. Please try to keep it in perspective. Should you jeopardize a relationship? Never, never, never. So now, between now and November the 8th, we as Christians have an opportunity to showcase our political diversity in a way that honors the God who made us diverse. If we get this right, we're going to gain a voice in our world. And we're going to gain influence. If we get it wrong, we're going to lose influence, and we're going to lose the right to be heard in the culture in which we live. So, let's live as Christians for eternity, not for the temporary. And let's be confident and curious, and composed, and compassionate. And let's honor the God who loved us so much that he left heaven's glory to die on a cross. We're going to celebrate that in communion, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. Broken body, shed blood. And he did that not to make a point, but to bring you and me into relationship. And that's how we should live as well. Let me pray for us.